our speaker tonight, Chris. I met him. He's been sober 21 years. He come into AA when he was 20 years old. And he didn't look like an alcoholic. I mean, he was a college kid, and he wore little old shorts and Notre Dame sweatshirts, and he was clean cut. And, you know, he chewed that damn backer and spit in a bottle, and, you know. But he was a chocolate damn mess. That's what we used to call it in AA when it's easier to make another than it is to clean that one up, you know. I wasn't his first sponsor. I'm his sponsor. But I wasn't his first sponsor. His first sponsor was a Catholic priest. And the Catholic priest left to go, I don't know where Catholic priests go. Where did he go, Chris?
A monastery,
yeah. So Chris asked me to be a sponsor. Now, I ain't sure that Chris run the preacher off, but I bet he come real damn close, because the priest, he asked him, said, "Can I write you?" He said, no, you can't write me. "Can I call you?" "Oh, no, you can't call me." So I'd say Chris probably run him out of town, more like. Bill's here tonight. He went with me to 12-step Beetle. Ready to go get him. I'd been talking to Beetle for 10 years. And we went up there, and on the way up there, it was midnight before Chris called, and on the way up there, he said, "Reckon he's got a gun?" I said, "Oh, he got a bunch of guns. He got a bunch of guns." He said, "Reckon he'll shoot us." I said, "No, he might shoot you. He won't shoot me, but he might shoot you." Really, I told him about where it'd be better when he got there, you know. And Beetle laid up in an old van that smelled like dog and puke and beer and whiskey. And Chris lit cigarettes all night. Chris lit cigarettes for him. And when we left there, I told Chris, I said, "Now this is where you'll be when you're 50-year-old if you just keep doing this shit right here. You'll be in a van and you won't be able to know your ass from a hole in the ground. And if you're lucky, somebody will come and help you." So it helped the boy stay sober a long time. He hadn't been sober, about 8 months. We went to a lot of meetings together. I'm a meeting maker, you know that. Everybody knows me, know I make meetings, and I sit right there every time, y'all. So if I ask you to get up, don't take no offense to it.
Just get up.
Been my share for many years. Come on up here, Chris. Tell us what happened.
All right.
Thank you.
We still talk maybe 2-3 times a week, and we never end our conversation without "I love you."
I'm Chris. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Chris.
I'm grateful to be here and be sober tonight. Really appreciate the crowd that's here. It's seeing this lets me know that AA works, because people keep coming back, and I really appreciate that. Joe, I'm really glad you're here. Newcomer, and it's good to see Charlie and Robert and Beetle and Leo and Perry. It's good to meet you from Lebanon and Lafayette. And I got sober in Lebanon. Lebanon's a very, very special place to me. I currently live in Murfreesboro. I was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio. Go Flyers, Elite Eight. I went to high school in Russell Springs, Kentucky. Go Cats tonight. And I went to Lebanon to attend college at Cumberland University, and I got married and ended up in Murfreesboro. So, but Lebanon is a very special place for me. I come from in Ohio. My parents divorced when I was 3, and my father got custody of me, and he worked for General Motors for 38 and a half years, third shift the entire time. So I hate saying this, but I had a babysitter at night. I had somebody down the street, they'd drop me off, and they were real good people and stayed with them, and didn't have any contact with my mother whatsoever. I look back today, and, you know, my dad and I both, I'll just tell you, did the best that we absolutely could. It wasn't always... It wasn't always good. Sometimes it wasn't even close to good. And he drank. I don't know whether he's an alcoholic or not, but he drank. And I can tell you from an early age, I really, really enjoyed when he drank, because a couple of different things happened. He wasn't as hard on me. He wasn't quite as strict on me. He was a little more lenient. And I got to go to the bars a lot with him, and I enjoyed that, even being little. He would get drunk, and I got to play like pinball and darts with his friends. And I drank Shirley Temples back then, if anybody knows what that is. I mean, I'd sit right up there at the bar and drink Shirley Temples, and I thought that was really, really neat. But, you know, he coached me in sports. I played a lot of sports, played baseball, basketball, and soccer. And you know, so I really respect that, him working third shift. And then when I got out of school, he'd get up and do sports with me. I started at a very early age. This is long before drinking, but I started lying at a very early age. Probably about the age of 5, best I can remember. And because I had this whatever I had inside of me that I thought my dad, I thought he wanted me to be perfect. You know, I wanted to, and I wanted to portray that to him the best way I could. The only way I could figure out how to do that, and I was scared to death of him, but was to lie. And so I can tell you that by the time I got to AA, golly, and lying since 5, I had quite a mess. I had a difficult time differentiating the true from the false. And my dad is very much like me. Like we would have a problem and I'd lie about it. God, and a month later we'd still be in that problem rehashing it. And so he'd ask me these questions, and literally it was like a multiple choice test in my head. You know, I'm like, oh my God, what answer does he want to hear? You know, which one's going to keep me out of trouble the most? And he had this saying, and I hate it, but it would hit me right in the heart. He'd say, are you just saying that because you think that's what I want to hear? Or are you saying that because it's the truth? That's all. It's the truth. You know, it never was the truth. It was so bad by the time I came to AA, my relationship with my father. If I'd have told him it was dark outside right now, he'd have had to got up and looked. That's how bad that was. So I'm grateful that's not like that today. Very grateful. And I just want to say, too, up front, this program and this way of life, being involved in this program and working this program, it's the best way of life I have ever known, bar none. It has blown my mind. I don't deserve everything that I have today. I'm not near thankful enough. This helps to stand up and tell the truth and share. But I'll just tell you, because I have days where I'm not grateful enough, or I have days that it's all about me, and those days aren't very good, you know, when it's all about me. But so I started, finally took me a drink when I was 13 years old. My best friend that lived behind the babysitter's home, his brother was of age, and I went over there one day, and they had he had some beer left from the night before. He had 4 cans of Coors Light, and so we had 2 apiece. And he, you know, my friend Scott said, "Hey, you want to drink these?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know." And it was like crunch time, you know. It was like there was this one part that was like, you know, I was really scared because I was like, you know, I probably shouldn't be doing this. And then there was this other part that was like, you know, my dad always does it, and he's happy, and it, you know, it probably wouldn't hurt anything. And so I drank that, and now here's exactly how I did it. Scott was kind of sipping on his. Well, I just turned mine up and killed it. It was okay. But I know I couldn't wait to get to that other one. I said, "We're going to drink them all?" He said, "Oh, yeah." So we drank the next one. You know, and right away I felt pretty good that I drank that the way I did, like that I beat him drinking, you know, at 13. And And I remember, you know, we went swimming. They had a swimming pool. I remember being underwater and opening my eyes, and I mean, everything was just a spinning, and I thought, man, this is awesome. And I got, you know, we got done with all that, and I walked home that day later, and I really felt like that day that I had stumbled upon something that really, I don't know what it did to me or for me, but it was like, and I know a lot of y'all have heard this, but like an umbrella had opened up inside of me. I wasn't scared of nothing. All my troubles that I fretted over did not seem. And the really cool part of it was that I kind of had this conscious deal going on in my mind that I was probably going to do that again because I really liked it. And I remember all the way going, the only thing I was afraid of was that my dad might smell it when I got home. But I remember thinking, man, no wonder he drinks this stuff. And I mean, this is awesome. But the lion and stuff at home was terrible. Absolutely terrible. If my mouth was moving in conversation with him, it was a lie. I stayed a nervous wreck all the time. I had a great escape, is called grandparents. Got to go over there every weekend. And it was like two different worlds. I couldn't wait to get over there. I was the favorite out of like 11 or 12 grandchildren. And I knew how to play it, I guess. I don't know. I think the world of my grandparents. I loved them very much and had a very special relationship with them. But it was like getting dropped off at Disney World or something for me, because it felt like it was out of prison and into Disney. And I was just sharing with somebody the other evening something that I thought of. When my dad would come pick me up every Sunday evening, you could just see this change in me. I mean, you could feel it in the room. I was happy-go-lucky having a ball at my grandparents', and about 3 or 4 o'clock set in on Sunday afternoon, and I was done. You know, I started thinking, man, I gotta go back to reality. And I never said anything to my grandparents about that or anything, and I know they could see it too, but I also know that was their son, you know, so it's okay to reflect back on that today. But anyway, I things got so bad at home, and I just couldn't function. We just didn't get along very well. So at the age of 15, and of course I've been drinking a couple of years, I'd go spend the night with Scott in the summer, and his brother would have liters of Canadian Mist, and I started drinking that, and just again to continue how I drank, they had this shot glass, and one side was a single shot, and the other side was a double shot. Well, Scott drank single shots, so I did the double side. Scott chased it, so I didn't, and I'd get so drunk and just goofy, and I did that a lot. You know, I liked it. I liked what it did. It just seemed to take life's issues away. So at the age of 15, as things got bad, I came up with this awesome idea to find my mother. Had no idea like even where to start, and just had like vague, for whatever reason, I knew her maiden name. Anyway, I talked to where I was staying at night, and I remembered her sister's name, my aunt on her side, the next day I go down, I go to spend the night, and she's like, hey, I got a hold of your aunt, and I said, okay, and she said she lives nearby, and she said, she said your mother lives in Kentucky, and and she's like, well, do you want to see her? Do you want to talk to her? And I was tore up. And a few nights later, all of a sudden I'm on the phone with this lady that's my mom, you know, and golly, you talk about just craziness. And I thought, wow, this is it. This is the great escape. You know, this is I found a way out, and I didn't know how to get out. So I ran away one day. I just arranged it with my aunt and uncle that I hadn't seen, I guess, since I was three. I was going to a private Catholic high school. It came lunchtime one day. I talked to them on the payphone. They said, be at this convenience store in 10 minutes. So I run down this busy street in Dayton, Ohio, and there's a van sitting at a convenience store with the door open, and I jump in. And they're like, hey, we're your aunt and uncle, and okay. And I'd met my mom previous to that. I'd gone and had like this sneak set up meeting. My mom came up from Kentucky and met. And like I decided, I said, yeah, I'm gonna come live with you. I can't do this. And of course, she told me, you know, that her and my father couldn't get along, and a lot of the reasons they divorced. So I did that, and I stayed with them for a while till they could do the court stuff and all that, and I'd get to go. And so we journey off to so I'm going from Dayton, Ohio to Russell Springs, Kentucky, and we're on the way down there, and my mom's like, she said something about it being a dry county. And I, of course, in Dayton, there's drinking every corner. And I said, what do you mean? It don't rain here? And she said, no. She said, there's no alcohol. And I thought, oh, my God. I may have screwed up. And I mean, I didn't tell her that, but I was like, what? So I go from I'd had a private Catholic education my entire life. It's really ironic that I'm standing down here talking. And so I go from a private Catholic school to a public school in South Central Kentucky. I mean, I had a ball. I didn't have to wear a uniform anymore. I got to wear jeans. I let my hair grow out. I got my ear pierced. I used to have like a perm in the back. I did. So I go and I'm so excited about this, all this like newfound freedom. But I had one major concern, and I asked some people at school that day. I said, what do y'all do for fun around here? And they said, what do you mean? I said, what do you do for fun? I'm new here. And they said, we drink on the weekends. And I said, where do you drink at? My mom said, this is a dry county. And so they told me about bootleggers. And I mean, I had no idea what that was. And so I got introduced to that. You paid like double the price. But I mean, it was there. You didn't get, you know, ID'd or anything. And it was like McDonald's. I mean, it was a trailer, and you pulled around this brick wall, and you just told them what you wanted. And I mean, I thought, this is awesome. And I didn't work because I played baseball. So just to kind of tell you where my mind is, I got $2 a day for lunch in high school from my mother, so I just didn't eat lunch. So come Friday afternoon, I had $10, and you get together with a couple other guys and put all your money together, and we stayed drunk all weekend. So that, you know, that's at 15 and 16, exactly how I thought. I always just wanted to try to beat the system. I was always thinking about me, I can tell you that. You know, finally started having some relationships in high school. They were an absolute disaster. I mean, absolute disaster. I mean, they were great for me at first for a while, but then they never did work. I didn't really have relationships. I kind of took hostages. I did really good in baseball in high school, and got together with the drinking crowd, and basically drank on weekends. When I had troubles in relationships, or just troubles period, I started drinking during the week. I can tell you that before I came to college, a friend of mine, I was out with him drinking, and he brought me home. He had to be home, so he dropped me off. And all I hear is somebody hollering at me. I'm like passed out in his seat. I couldn't even get out. And he went and got my mom to come get me out. And so she got me out, and she's just hollering at me. And I go in and crawl up the steps and go to bed. And there's a big note on my stairs the next morning. She had gotten me a vehicle that I didn't have a vehicle yet, and she had gotten me one that she was going to let me take to college. I decided to come to Cumberland University in Lebanon. And she said that I wasn't responsible enough to have that vehicle. So when it was time to come to Cumberland, literally, she just came and dropped me off in Lebanon at the dorm. Man, you talk about feeling like an idiot. But I did some pretty serious drinking in high school. I thought it was neat. I have a yearbook. I guess I would talk about it a lot. There was this girl that sat behind me in algebra. I didn't drink one stretch for like 9 days, and she was patting me on the back and telling me how good I was doing. So on the 10th day, I drank, and then that next day, she said, "Why'd you drink?" And I said, "Well, that's a long time." I said, "I was celebrating." So I came to college, and I did really good the first semester. I didn't drink a whole lot, just on weekends. But I did get with the drinking crowd. I was playing baseball. I got in a relationship with a girl 10 years older than me. She liked to drink. And, I mean, it was on. It was I want to share with you, I have never in my life ever gone anywhere and bought like a drink or a beer, like a 12-ounce beer. Like if somebody said, "Do you want to go get a beer?" I would get like a quart, you know, because I thought that was one. And anytime I ever got caught, I said that I'd had two. Because I got caught one time. My college baseball coach, who is very much against drinking, could smell it on me in his class one morning, and he put me in a game to pitch that day, kind of because he knew, and he was going to prove a point, but I got the people out. But I'll never forget the assistant coach coming and saying, "Hey, Coach Hunt smelled alcohol on you the other day, and he knows you were drunk or hungover." I said, "Oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to tell him?" And he said, "You need to tell him truth." And I said, what do I do?" And he said, "You need to go over to his house and talk to him." So I went over to his house and talked to him. And he said, did I not smell alcohol on you the other morning?" I said, "Yes, sir, you did." And he asked me, he said, "Well, I just wanted to talk to you because a lot of our upperclassmen, I know they drink and I think they have drinking problems." And he said, "You're only a freshman. I don't want you to turn out like that." So, and I mean, I had been hammered the night before. So I told him, I said, "Well, sir, I really appreciate your concern for me. I said, I don't ever drink." And I said, "We went up to this other college last night." And I said, "I had two beers." And I said, "It just tore me up." And I'd had a lot more than two beers. So this relationship I was in, I can tell you, was not very healthy at all. I mean, it went on to almost, it almost killed me, to be honest with you. It about killed me. I continued the drinking. As the relationship got worse, I drank more. I used to love to drink with a group of people. You know, thinking about resentments, I would drink with a group of guys like in the dorm room, and I'd start talking about somebody that I hated, and I'd get done and it'd go around the circle and it'd get back to me and I'd start on somebody else. And when somebody, I used to love to drink with people that felt sorry for me, because for whatever reason, when somebody felt sorry for me, it made me feel like I was right. You know what I'm saying? They'd say, oh, that poor guy, man, no wonder. Get him a drink, you know. I loved it. When people felt sorry for me, I thought, man, this guy is smart because he knows I'm right. But life got to be such a screwed up mess for me. I mean, everything. I was working at the Lebanon Democrat, the newspaper. I had to be there at 4 o'clock in the morning. I'd miss about once a week. And the supervisor, he was a great enabler. He'd tell them all. He'd say, oh, he's got a full load of classes. He plays baseball. I don't know how he does it. And, you know, it wasn't that I was missing work. I was laid up drunk. But I can tell you that it got so bad that, you know, that bragging about it part that I was talking about in high school that I thought was real cute and all, you know, it turned to like an embarrassment and a shame. Yes, Cumberland's a very small school. It's only 1 square mile. There was 1,000 students when I graduated in 95. And I would do some things that I wasn't very proud of. And as I'd go across campus, people would ask me about them. I said, oh, no, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, there was no bragging about it. It was not uncommon for me to get drunk and to call that girlfriend at whatever hour it may be and just dog cuss her and let her know that, you know, look what you've done to me. Come to the next morning, people saying, hey, I put you to bed last night and I helped you get undressed. I held you up while we was in the bathroom. Man, I don't miss that stuff, I can tell you that. But that wasn't uncommon. And it was such a double life because I'm trying to portray to the baseball coach that I'm this way when I'm really like way the other way. You know, like I've got a drinking problem, and I really wasn't sure that I did, but oddly enough, you know, my grandparents, like I said, I stayed with them every weekend, and it was raised Catholic and went to Catholic church with them on weekends. I didn't really care for that because we went on Saturday Mass at 4:30. They lived about 5 miles from church, and they'd leave at 3:30. To get the seat that they wanted. And I'm a big Notre Dame football fan. Please don't throw anything at me. And that Notre Dame was always on. I thought, man, we got to go up here and go to church. And back to some of those Catholic roots, too. In the grade school, like when we'd go to church and we'd have this quiet time and go to confession and talk to a priest. My quiet time, what I did the entire time was try to think of things to say. I thought, man, I really haven't done anything wrong. I need to make some stuff up. And I'd say almost the same stuff every time. I'd say, well, I told some lies and I said some things that were hurtful to people and I did some things I didn't mean to people. You know, and I'd get the, you know, whatever, say 10 Hail Marys and God bless you. And I did that. And ironically enough, like Liston said, my first sponsor was a Catholic priest. And trust me, I told him a lot more than I did some things to people that I didn't mean. I hurt people. And I got to share that with him too. But life just got so bad in college. And I swear that everything that was bad in my life, the more I tried to fix it, the worse I made it. And I mean, and I couldn't, and the more I drank at it, it like if I went out that night and drank about something, it like got worse exponentially, like in powers of 10. And I come to the next morning and there was this whole other mess. So I was just finally so screwed up that I went to, I mean, I hadn't been really going to church, but the church was, it was diagonal from the college, so I went to see a priest. I just thought, man, something's got to give here. And so we talked for probably 3 or 4 months, and really enjoyed talking with him. He had some sort of peace about him that I hadn't been exposed to and that I didn't know about. We didn't talk about any Catholic God or anything. The last night that I drank, my girlfriend had been over the night before, and she had there was a wine cooler left in the refrigerator. Well, I had a test Friday morning, and I had to be at work at 4 o'clock. So, you know, being at the ripe old age of 20, I felt very sophisticated that night. I thought, you know what? A wine cooler would be good to sit and study for this test. And the thought that went through my mind was, a wine cooler is a female drink. It won't hurt me. So I drank a wine cooler and was studying. You know, everything was going good. A friend of mine knocked on the door. Hey, you want to go get a beer? Well, I said, I got a test. I got to study. But I said, you know what? A beer probably wouldn't hurt. So we go to the convenience store. I got a quart. Drank it real quick. We got back. Another friend knocks on the door. I was good to have friends like this. Had a half pint of whiskey. He said, hey, I don't want this. You want it? Well, I got a test, but you know what? I said, yeah, I'll take it. Needless to say, went through that. We went back to the liquor store 2 more times. I came to about 7 o'clock that morning. The dang sun was so bright in the window. I was sick as a dog. So I didn't study for the test. Couldn't remember anything I had had studied. Missed work. So I went to the priest's house. I thought, man, I got to talk to him. I was hoping he'd feel sorry for me. He opens the door. He says, man, you look terrible. What's going on? I said, I got drunk last night. I said, God, I missed a test. I'm going to fail this test. Didn't go to work. So sat and talked to me. Was drinking coffee. He asked me if I was an alcoholic. I said, I don't know. I said, I think my dad is. But as we talked, I said, you know, I started getting a little bit honest. I said, it affects me a little bit differently than my I said, everybody drinks in college. But I said, it does. It affects me a little bit differently. So lo and behold, I kind of white-knuckled it for a few days. And I went back over to see him in a few days. And he shared with me that about AA. And that he'd been in AA for 5 years. You know, he gave me a pamphlet, The 12 Questions. He gave me the book from Hazelden about acceptance. Yeah, I went back and read that stuff. I could relate a whole lot. So I went back and talked to him. I said, wow, this is really neat. You know, I'd really like to try this. And he said, just hang in there for a few days. I got another guy who's going to come over and we'll both talk to you. So a few nights later, a guy comes over. Well, he's a doctor. So this doctor and priest are sitting here talking to this college kid about they're sharing their experience, strength, and hope with me. And I was sharing honestly with them about me and my drinking. And so the next night I went, the doctor, he took me to a meeting, the Wilson County Friendship Group in Lebanon down on the square. I can tell you the exact color of the floor tile because I had my head down. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. A couple of funny things that night before, I asked the priest, I said, do I need to take a notebook? He said, for what? I thought it was like school. I thought it was going to be a test. You know, I really thought like somebody was going to stand up and say, hey, alcohol kills this many brain cells, blah, blah, blah. Thank God, he said, I'll be your sponsor. I said, what's that? He told me. I said, that's all right. I said, my mom or my girlfriend can do it. Luckily, he stayed after me. You know, he said, no, I'll be your sponsor. I sat at the first step table, and it's the first place I'd ever been that people were sharing honestly about things they had done, what had happened to them, and that they were sober, and they were happy, and they were laughing. All I knew was I did not know how to quit drinking. That's all I knew. I came to AA on that premise, that my life was totally screwed up. It was completely unmanageable. And I did not know how to quit drinking. And so I kept coming back, and I'm so thankful for the old timers that were there. Again, I was 20 and in college, and I can't tell you how many old timers stayed around after the meeting and talked to me and shared with me and told me to hang in there. I wanted the easier, softer way. I was really struggling at 3 weeks. And finals were coming up, so I asked my sponsor. I said, hey, look, finals are coming up. I said, you know, I'm really trying hard. I'm working steps. I'm going to meetings. I'm sharing with you. I said, I'm a mess. And I said, do you think you could write a note to my professors and tell them what I'm doing? You know, that I'm getting sober and that I don't need to take these finals. And he just looked at me, and I said, do you think you could get me like at least a B? But he didn't do that, and I'm so thankful he didn't. He said, keep going to meetings, because I didn't go to meetings for a few days, because I was a mess, and I thought, man, these people can't see me like this. I mean, I was crying, I was shaking, I was a mess. So lo and behold, I went back to meetings. I got there early, and people said, hey, where you been? And I told them. I said, I've been a mess the last few days, and I just didn't feel like I could come. And I said, have y'all ever felt like that at all? And they just laughed with me, you know, and just extended out a lot of love. But AA has been so good to me. And I have that allergy in the doctor's opinion that it talks about, that average temperate drinkers, normal drinkers don't have. That when I use alcohol in any form, I develop a craving, and I have a mental obsession, and I just go at it, you know? I've never wanted to drink just one. I don't understand one. I don't know what social drinking is. I thought that meant getting drunk in public. And I truly did. I didn't care for social drinking, and I was a good con. I always, like, rode around with people while they would drive, and I was getting such a mess I couldn't drive. But they, I wanted to, like, socially act, but I wanted to be drunk, you know? Like, if we were going to a bar, I hated bars. Because it just seemed too controlled. But, like, I'd want to drink a six-pack before we got there and be able to act like the people that were just starting to drink. And I couldn't do that. I didn't do very well in bars. I think I finally got out of that relationship that I was in at about 3 years in AA. And it had claw marks, I mean, completely all over it. And I was out of relationships for a while and really just trying to focus on me and work the steps and get better. And it's a miracle, the life I have today. And I want to go back to my first experience in that book. The very first thing I highlighted in my book was in the doctor's opinion, where it said men and women drink essentially for the effect produced by alcohol. Man, I could relate to that. And then we talked about, you know, being restless, irritable, and discontent. That like, stated some feelings for me. I knew what that meant. I had some hope as I got in that book and began to read about myself. I had some hope as I met other people like me. And I can't remember the last time I'd had any hope. It was very, it was just such change, and it's never been a bed of roses, but life is so much better. I got married back in 2000. So I'm married to a woman that has never seen me take a drink. That's a miracle. We've got two children, two girls, 6 and 11, Allison and Caitlin, and they've never seen me drink. And I'm thankful for that. But I'm also very aware that that doesn't mean they haven't experienced alcoholism. Because I can tell you that I've gone through some stretches where I didn't work steps, or wasn't working a program, or wasn't really seeking out God's will, or wasn't trying to help others, or wasn't doing what I needed to be doing at meetings. You know, and then you walk in the door from work, and they're like, God, what's wrong with Dad? You know, well, he's drunk, but he ain't had a drink. You know what I'm saying? And it's true, I can share that with you. But when I get back in this program, when I try to help others, when I sponsor people, when I work with others, my life goes so much better. You know, the saying over there that's on the back of the sponsorship pamphlet, that I am responsible when anyone anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I'm responsible. I have been given a gift, I mean, very, very freely given. And the least I can do is give that back to others. It talks about in the book that our very life as ex-problem drinkers is dependent upon the constant thought of others and how to help meet their needs. And of course, my thinking is, well, God, if I'm constantly thinking of somebody else, what about me? You know, because that's what I am the problem, and I struggle with that. I get to thinking about me. And I still want life to work out the way I want it to. But I do know today that God is in control of that, you know. And I have a relationship with God today. And I'm very grateful for that. And I can tell you that when I don't start my morning with prayer and meditation, I don't have too good a day. When I don't end it at night with prayer and meditation, I don't have too good a day. But I try to seek out His will. I try to be a maximum service to Him and to my fellow man. I haven't always done that. Like I said, I went through a stretch. I called Liston. I said, man, I'm a mess. He said, are you going to meetings? Yeah. Are you helping anybody? No. You praying? Yeah. And I reflect back on it. It's like, yeah, I'm going to meetings. I show up, and then as soon as it's over, I'm gone. You know, didn't bother to talk anybody or seek anybody out to help anybody. Prayed just to be able to say I prayed, you know, check. I was doing like checklist. Yep, I prayed. Didn't stop to listen to what God may have been saying or what He was putting in front of me. Just, yeah, I prayed. Going to AA, been sober a long time. So that can happen, and I'm grateful. that was a very good experience for me to go through. Thank God I didn't drink. Today, life is very full. I've been at my same career for 17 years. I actually manage a Kroger store, and the store I manage last year did $55 million. And they trust me with that, you know? I mean, that's a miracle. I mean, it's a real blessing. And my wife is a... It's unbelievable what a woman God put in my life. I mean, just absolutely amazing. And she works, and we've both done very well. AA has affected every part of my life, every bit of it. Relationships, finances. You know, I kind of like to say that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I'm able to be a homeowner, a husband, a father, an employee, an employer, I get to do all that, and it's just all been so freely given to me. It's nothing that I have done. I haven't done enough to give back. I tell people all the time, meetings, I'm a great receiver. I love to receive. I love gifts. You know, sobriety was great. You first getting it, you're like, oh, this, yeah, keep doing, you know. Keep bringing it. Keep bringing the gifts. But I have to get up off my butt and give back. You know, I'm responsible for that. And every one of you all being here helps me so much. And it's just amazing when I take the time and pray and meditate and try to seek out God's will. It's miraculous the things He does. And I've told several people, I should probably spend the rest of my life on my knees thanking God for what I have, for what He's done for me, the people He's put in my life. And listen, He's helped me so much. And man, he had the hand of AA out at 2 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, whatever. He'd get up and talk to me, knowing that I was crazy and what I was saying wasn't making any sense. But he knew I needed to ramble. You know, he knew I just needed to ramble. And so I don't know. I got here when I got here. I have a belief that I don't think I was the only alcoholic at Cumberland University in 1992. But I was the alcoholic that God saw fit to send me across the street to a recovering alcoholic, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was validated a few weeks ago in Lebanon. I went to a meeting, and there was a guy there that I went to college with. We're both the same age. We're both 41. He's on his third go-round of AA. Lost his job, going through a divorce. And I was so thankful to see him. I said, I am so glad I saw you. I said, it's just because I could just see. I thought, this is there, but for the grace of God go I. You know, we both went to the same college. We both evidently drank very similarly. And I get to, you know, and I get this, you know, God's grace and mercy. And I know that's what it is. It's not anything that I've done. Liston has shared with me so much and taught me so much out of the book. Probably one of the things I'm most grateful for, anytime I really struggle, I can get back in chapter 4 and We Agnostics, because I'm struggling with faith, you know. And it talks about that God does not make too tough terms for those that seek Him. Man, I'm so thankful for that. Because I don't do a perfect job of seeking Him. And I don't always seek Him first. And I don't always think of Him first. But it also mentions that, you know, as we draw near to Him, He discloses Himself to us. And just absolute miracles, you know. I'm an alcoholic that was beyond human aid. I tried to quit for girlfriends. I tried to quit for this and that. I couldn't do it. I can't do it. And I'm a pickle, and I say that, because once a cucumber becomes a pickle, it can't ever be a cucumber again. And so I'm a pickle. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. Because being a pickle, it got me in here. You know, and it really, some of the best people in my life, some of the dearest relationships, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I'm closer with you all than like my parents. Any good thing I've learned about life has been in here. I'm going to wrap up with this real quick. There's a pamphlet, new people, or anybody. This is fun, new or old, whatever. It's an AA-proof pamphlet. It just says, is AA for you? 12 questions only you can answer. You know, this was first given to me that night by a Catholic priest. Have you ever decided to stop drinking for a week or so, but only lasted for a couple of days? Everybody, you can say, we can do group participation. Do you wish people would mind their own business about your drinking, stop telling you what to do? Have you ever switched from one kind of drink to another in the hope that this would keep you from getting drunk? Have you had to have an eye-opener upon awakening during the past year? Do you envy people who can drink without getting into trouble? I hate those people. Have you had problems connected with drinking during the past year? Has your drinking caused trouble at home? Do you ever try to get extra drinks at a party because you do not get enough? Do you tell yourself you can stop drinking anytime you want to, even though you keep getting drunk when you don't mean to? Have you missed days of work or school because of drinking? Do you have blackouts? Have you ever felt that your life would be better if you did not drink? This is the part that sucks. This is the score. Did you answer yes four or more times? Yeah, like by number four. If so, you are probably in trouble with alcohol. Why do we say this? Because thousands of people in AA have said so for many years. They found out the truth about themselves the hard way. But again, only you can decide whether you think AA is for you. Try to keep an open mind on the subject. If the answer is yes, we will be glad to show you how we stop drinking ourselves. Just call. Sometimes I have to keep it that simple because I have a very complicated mind. I am a great thinker. And I analyze it all. That's pretty plain and simple. You know, when I got this pamphlet, I had some hope. Because I thought, man, somebody's asking questions about me that I can relate to. I really appreciate y'all being here and letting me share. What a great crowd. Thank you so much. God bless all of you.
Keeps us sober.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back. It works if you work it. It sucks if you don't.
Yep. All right.